over. It was Sammy Roberts, not one of her brothers, who first spread Princess Helen's thighs, certain, as she told her mother about it at once. More of Helen Mayberry's influence, and Dora kissed her and told her that she was a good girl, and now go find Papa and ask him to examine you. And I did, and she hadn't been hurt, not to mention. But it gave Dora some control over the matter. Just as Helen Mayberry had guided Dora at about the same age, so Dora had told me, long before that. In consequence, our oldest daughter did not get pregnant until she was almost as old as, and quite a bit more filled out than Dora had been when I married her. Ole Hansen married her, and Sven Hansen and I, and Dora and Ingrid, helped the youngsters start their homestead. Helen thought the baby was Ole's. And, for all I know, she was right. No fuss. No fuss when Zach married Hilda Hansen, either. In Happy Valley, pregnancy was equivalent to betrothal. I can't recall any girl who married without that proof of eligibility. Certainly none of our daughters. Having neighbors was grand. He not only fetched his fiddle over the rampart, but could call. I could call some, and while I hadn't touched a violin for 50 years or so, I found it came back to me. So we spelled each other as Pop liked to dance, too. Like so. Square 'em up. Salute your lady. Opposite lady. Corner gal. Right-hand gal. Salute your own and make her a throne. All stand up and don't let her fall. Swing your ladies one and all. Moses lived a long time ago. King said yes. Moses said no. Form hands. Circle right. Pharaoh was that king's first name. Made him live a life of shame. Alamein left with a do-si-do. Then home you go in a swing. Said yes and the wave did part. First couple through the Red Sea. Now corner gal and right-hand man. Corner boy, right-hand gal. On around and keep it coming right and left. A happy band on the opposite shore, so all form up and swing once more. The king loops alone on Egypt's shore, chosen people slaves, no more. So kiss your lady and whisper in her ear, then sit her down and get her a beer. Intermission. Oh, we had fun. Dora learned to dance when she was a new grandmother, and was still dancing when she was a great-grandmother. Early years, the parties were oftenest at our place because we had the biggest house and a compound large enough for a big party. Start dancing late afternoon. Dance so you couldn't see your partner. Then a potluck buffet supper to candlelight and moonlight. Then sing a while and bed down all over the place. All the rooms. The roof. Shakedowns in the compound. Some wagons. And if anybody ever slept alone, I never heard about it. Nor any trouble worth mentioning if things got a little loose around the edges. Next morning there was likely to be a double performance by the Mermaid Tavern players. One comedy, one tragedy. Then it would be time for those who lived farthest away to round up their kids, hitch up their mules and roll, while those who lived closer helped clean up before doing the same thing. Oh, I remember one spot of trouble. A man gave his wife a black eye over nothing much. Whereupon 6 men nearest him tossed him out the gate and barred it. Made him so mad he itched up and left, and headed back up the great gorge toward Hopeless Pass. A fact that wasn't noticed for a while, as his wife and baby moved in with her sister and her husband and their kids, and stayed on. A polygamy. Though, not the only one. No laws about marriage or sex. No laws about anything for many years. Except that incurring the disapproval of your neighbors, such as by giving your wife a black eye, meant risking Coventry, about the worst thing that can happen to a pioneer short of being lynched. But migrants tend to be both horny and easy about it. Superior intelligence always includes strong sexual drive, and the pioneers in Happy Valley had been through a double screening, first in a decision to leave Earth, and then in deciding to tackle Hopeless Pass. So we had real survivors in Happy Valley, smart, cooperative, industrious, tolerant, willing to fight when necessary, but not likely to fight over trivial matters. Sex, is not trivial, but fighting over it is usually pretty silly. It's characteristic only of a man who isn't sure of his manhood, which didn't describe any of these men. They were sure of themselves. No need to prove it. No cowards, no thieves, no weaklings, no bullies. The rare exception didn't last long enough to count. Either dead like that first three, or ran away from us like that idiot who took a poke at his wife. These rare purgings were always quick and informal. For many years, the only law we had was the Golden Rule, unwritten but closely followed. In such a community, functionless taboos about sex couldn't last. They didn't tend to be brought into our valley in the first place. Oh, close inbreeding wasn't well thought of. These pioneers were not ignorant of genetics, nor of conception control. But the attitude was pragmatic. I don't think I ever heard anyone speak out against incest that was just a jolly romp with no outcome. But I recall one girl who married her half-brother openly and had several children by him. I assume that they were his. There may have been gossip, but it did not get them ostracized. Any marriage pattern was treated as the private business of the partners in it, not something to be licensed by the community. I recall two young couples who decided to combine their farms, then built a house big enough by adding to the larger of their two houses and making the other into a barn. Nobody asked who slept with whom. It was taken for granted that it was then a four-cornered marriage, and no doubt had been one before they enlarged that house and pooled their goods. Nobody's business but theirs. Among such people, the plural of spouse is spice. A pioneer community, porn, everything else, always makes its own recreations, with sex at the top of the list. We had no professional entertainers. No theaters, unless you count the amateur theatricals started by our kids. No cabarets. No diversions dependent on sophisticated electronics. No periodicals. Few books. Certainly those meetings of the Happy Valley Dance Club continued as gentle orgies after it was too dark to dance, and the younger children were bedded down for the night. How else? But it was all quite gentle. A couple could always go to sleep in their own wagon and ignore the quiet luau elsewhere. No compulsion either way. Shucks, they didn't even have to attend the dances. But no one stayed away from those weekly dances if he or she could make it. It was particularly nice for young people. It gave them a chance to get acquainted and do their courting. Perhaps most first babies were conceived at our dances. There was opportunity. On the other hand, our girl did not have to get knocked up just through a romp if it didn't suit her. But a girl was likely to marry by 15, 16, and their bridegrooms weren't much older. Late first marriage is a big city custom, never found in a pioneer culture. Dora and I? But Minerva, dear, I told you earlier. I started the freight schedule to the outside the year Gibby was born, and Zach was, 18, I think. I have to keep converting new beginnings years into standard years. Anyhow, he was taller than I was. Not much short of 2 meters, and massed maybe 80 kilos. And Andy was almost as big and strong. There was pressure on me not to wait, as I knew Zach might get married any day, and I could not send a wagon over the pass just with Andy. Ivor was only 9. A big help around the farm, but not big enough for this job. But I could not find teamsters other than in my own family. There were only about 12 families in the valley. They had not been there long and did not yet feel the press to buy things that I did. I wanted 3 new wagons, not just because my 3 were wearing out, but because Zach would need one when he married. And so would Andy. And I might have to dower Helen with one, if and when. The same applied to plows and several sorts of metal farm equipment. Prosperous as we were, Happy Valley could not be entirely self-supporting without a metals industry, which is to say, not for many years. I had another long list of things to buy, on a quarterly schedule. But the food that 50-odd farms could ship out could not buy much at the other end in competition with farmers who did not have the expense of shipping by mule train over the rampart and across the prairie. I still subsidize our link with civilization by writing drafts on John Magee to be debited against my partnership in the Andy J, and thereby brought things into the valley we would not otherwise have had. Some I kept. Dora got in-house running water from that first trip, our own boys made, just in time to keep my promise to her, Zach got Hilda pregnant right after they got back, and their first baby, Ingrid Dora, and the completion of Dora's bathroom arrived about together. Other things I sold to other farmers for labor. But the buck strain of mules, strong, intelligent, and all of them capable of being taught to talk, eventually corrected our balance of trade. Once those two wells were drilled on the prairie and I could count on running a string of mules to separation center without losing half of them, this meant medicines, books, and many other things for our valley. Lazarus Long did not intend to surprise his wife, but neither of them ever knocked on their own bedroom door. Finding it closed, he opened it gently against the possibility that she might be napping. Instead, he found her standing at the window, mirror angled to the light, carefully plucking a long gray hair. He watched her in shocked dismay, then steadied himself and said, "Adorable."
"Oh," she turned. "You startled me. I didn't hear you come in, dear."
"I'm sorry. May I have that?"
"Have what, Woodrow?"
He went to her, bent down and picked up the silver hair. "This. Beloved, every hair of your head is precious to me. May I keep it?" She did not answer. He saw that her eyes were filled with tears. They started to overflow. "Dora, Dora," he repeated urgently. "Why are you crying, beloved?"
"I'm sorry, Lazarus. I did not intend for you to see me doing this."
"But why do it at all, Dorable? I have far more gray hair than you." She answered what he had not said, rather than what he did say.
"Dearest, I can't help it that I know when someone is, well, fibbing. I must call it since you have never lied to me."
"Well, Dorable, my hair is gray."
"Yes, sir. You did not mean to surprise me, I know. And I did not mean to snoop when I cleaned your study. I found your cosmetics kit, Lazarus, more than a year ago. It's sort of a fib, isn't it? When you do something to make your crisp red hair look gray. Something like what I do, I suppose, when I pluck hairs that are gray."
"You've been plucking gray hairs since you learned that I haven't been aging myself?"
"Oh, dear. No, no, Lazarus. I've been plucking them for ages. Much longer than that. Heavens, darling, I'm a great-grandmother. And look it. But what you do, careful as you are with it, and kind as it is for you to try, and I do appreciate it, doesn't make you look my age. It just makes you look prematurely gray."
"Possibly. Although I'm entitled to gray hair, Dorable. My hair was snow white not many years before you were born. It took something much more drastic than cosmetics, or plucking hairs to make me look young again. But there never seemed to be any reason to mention it."
He stepped up to her, put an arm around her waist, took the mirror and tossed it on the bed, turned her toward the window.
"Dora, your years are an achievement, not something to hide. Look out there. Farmhouses, right up to the hills, and many more we can't see from here. How many of our Happy Valley people are descended from your slim body?"
"I've never counted."
"I have. More than half of them, and I'm proud of you. Your breasts are baby-chewed. Your belly shows stretch marks. Your decorations of honor, adorable one, of valor, they make you more beautiful. So stand straight and tall, my lovely, and forget about silver hairs. Be what you are, and be it in style."
"Yes, Lazarus. I don't mind them myself. I did it to please you."
"Dorable, you can't help pleasing me. You always have. Do you want me to let my own hair go back to natural? It's not dangerous for me to be a Howard here in Happy Valley with my own kin all around me."
"I don't care, darling. Just don't do it on my account. If it makes it easier for you, first settler and all that, to look a little older, then do it."
"It does make it easier when I deal with other people. And it's no trouble. I know the routine so well I could do it in my sleep. But Dora, listen to me, darling.
Zach Briggs will call it top dollar sometime in the next 10 years. He saw John's letter. In the next 10 years. He saw John's letter. It's not too late to go to Secundus. There they can make you look like a young girl again, if that's what you want. And tack a good many extra years on, too. 50, maybe 100. She was slow in answering. Lazarus, are you urging me to do this? I'm offering it, but it's your body, most dear one. Your life. She stared at the window. More than half of them, you said? With the percentage increasing. Our kids breed like cats. And so do their kids.
Lazarus, truly we settled this many, many years ago. But it is even more so now. I don't want to leave our valley even to visit the outside. I don't want to leave our children, nor our children's children, nor their children. And I certainly would not want to come back looking like a young girl to watch the births of our great-great-grandchildren. You're right. I've earned my gray hairs, and now I'll wear them.
That's the girl I married. That's my durable Dora.
He moved his hand up higher, cupped a breast and tickled a nipple. She jumped, then relaxed to it.
I knew your answer, but I had to ask. My darling, age cannot weather you, nor custom stale your infinite variety. Where other women satiate, you must make hungry.
She smiled.
I'm not Cleopatra, Woodrow. Wench, that's your opinion. But what's your opinion against mine? Rangy Lil, I've seen thousands and thousands more women than you have, and I say that you make Cleopatra look homely.
Blarney tongue, she said softly. I'm sure you've never had a woman turn you down.
True, only because I never risk being turned down. I wait to be asked, always.
Are you waiting to be asked? All right, I'm asking. And I'd better start dinner.
Don't be in such a hurry, Lil. First I'm going to dump you on that bed. Then I'm going to flip your skirt up. Then I'm going to see if I can find any gray hair at that end. If so, I'll pluck them for you.
Beast? Scoundrel? Lecherous old goat? She smiled in delight. I thought we weren't going to bother any more with plucking gray hairs.
We were speaking of hair on your head, great-grandmother, but this other end is as young as ever, and better than ever, so we'll most carefully pluck and engrave from your pretty brown curls.
Sweetest old goat, if you can find any, you're welcome, but I've been plucking that end even more carefully than my scalp. Let me slip this dress off.
Whoops, hold it. That's Rangy Lil, the horniest bitch in Happy Valley, always in a hurry. Get your dress off, if you wish, but I'm going to find Lurton and tell him to saddle up Best Boy and go beg supper and a shakedown from his sister Margie and Lil. And I'll be back to pluck those disgraceful gray curls. Supper will be late, I'm afraid.
I don't mind if you don't, beloved.
That's my Lil. Darling, there isn't a man in the valley who wouldn't grab you and try to find another valley if you gave him the slightest encouragement. That includes your own sons and your sons-in-law. Every male here down to 14.
Oh, not true. Blarney again.
Want to bet? On second thought, we won't waste time plucking gray hairs at either end. When I get back from telling our youngest son to get lost for the night, I want to find you wearing just rubies and a smile, because you're not going to cook supper. We're going to scrape up a cold picnic instead and take it and a blanket up on the roof and enjoy the sunset.
Yes, sir. Oh, darling, I love you. EF or FF?
I'll leave that choice to Rangy Lil.
Footnote. 39,000 words omitted.
Lazarus opened the bedroom door very quietly. Looked in. Looked inquiringly at his daughter, Elf. A strikingly beautiful middle-aged woman with flaming red curls, shot slightly with gray.
She said, "Come in, Papa. Mama's awake."
She stood up to leave, taking with her a supper tray.
He glanced at it, subtracted in his mind what was still on it from what he had seen leave the kitchen on it.
Got a sum which was too near zero to please him. But he said nothing. Simply went to the bedside, smiled down at his wife. Dora smiled back. He leaned over and kissed her, then sat down where Elf had been. "How's my darling?"
"Just fine, Woodrow. Ginny, no. Elf
brought me the tastiest supper. I enjoyed it so much. But I asked her to put my rubies on me before she fed me. Didn't you notice?"
"Of course I did, beautiful. When did Rangy Lil ever eat supper without her rubies?"
She didn't answer. Her eyes closed. Lazarus kept quiet. Watched her respiration. Counted her heartbeats by watching a pulse in her neck.
"Do you hear them, Lazarus?"
Her eyes were open again.
"Hear what, Durable?"
"The wild geese. They must be right over the house."
"Oh, yes. Certainly.
They're early this year."
That seemed to tire her. She closed her eyes again. He waited.
"Sweetheart, will you sing Buck's song?"
"Certainly, Durable Dora."
Lazarus cleared his throat and started in.
"There's a schoolhouse by the pawn shop where Dora has her lessons. By the schoolhouse, there's a mule yard where Dora's friend Buck lives."
She closed her eyes again, so he sang the other verses very softly. But when he finished, she smiled at him.
"Thank you, darling. That was lovely. It's always been lovely. But I'm a little tired. If I drop off to sleep, will you still be here?"
"I'll always be here, dearest. You, sleep now."
She smiled again, and her eyes closed. Presently, her breathing grew slower as she slept. Her breathing stopped. Lazarus waited a long time before he called in Ginny and Elf.
This concludes the reading of Time Enough for Love by Robert Heinlein, Part 1. This book was read by Lloyd James. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Blackstone Audiobooks presents Time Enough for Love, Part 2, by Robert A. Heinlein, narrated by Lloyd James.
The book is subtitled The Lives of Lazarus Long. This part consists of the chapter titled Second Intermission through the end of the book. Second Intermission. More from the notebooks of Lazarus Long.
"Always tell her she's beautiful, especially if she is not. If you are part of a society that votes, then do so. There may be no candidates and no measures you want to vote for, but there are certain to be ones you want to vote against. In case of doubt, vote against. By this rule, you will rarely go wrong. If this is too blind for your taste, consult some well-meaning fool. There's always one around. And ask his advice. Then vote the other way. This enables you to be a good citizen, if such is your wish, without spending the enormous amount of time on it that truly intelligent exercise a franchise requires. Sovereign ingredient for a happy marriage. Pay cash or do without. Interest charges not only eat up a household budget, awareness of debt eat up domestic felicity. Those who refuse to support and defend a state have no claim to protection by that state. Killing an anarchist or a pacifist should not be defined as murder in a legalistic sense. The offense against the state, if any, should be using deadly weapons inside city limits, or creating a traffic hazard, or endangering bystanders, or other misdemeanors. However, the state may reasonably place a closed season on these exotic asocial animals whenever they are in danger of becoming extinct. An authentic buck pacifist has rarely been seen off Earth, and it is doubtful that any have survived the trouble there. Regrettable, as they had the biggest mouths and the smallest brains of any of the primates. The smallmouth variety of anarchist has spread through the galaxy at the very wave front of the diaspora. There is no need to protect them, but they often shoot back. Another ingredient for a happy marriage, budget the luxuries first. And still another, see to it that she has her own desk, then keep your hands off it. And another, in a family argument, if it turns out you are right, apologize at once. God split himself into a myriad parts that he might have friends. This may not be true, but it sounds good, and is no sillier than any other theology. To stay young requires unceasing cultivation of the ability to unlearn old falsehoods. Does history record any case in which the majority was right? When the fox gnaws, smile. A critic? Is a man who creates nothing and thereby feels qualified to judge the work of creative men. There is logic in this. He is unbiased. He hates all creative people equally. Money is truthful. If a man speaks of his honor, make him pay cash. Never frighten a little man. He'll kill you. Only a sadistic scoundrel or a fool tells the bald truth on social occasions. This sad little lizard told me that he was a brontosaurus on his mother's side. I did not laugh. People who boast of ancestry often have little else to sustain them. Humoring them costs nothing and adds to happiness in a world in which happiness is always in short supply. In handling a stinging insect, move very slowly. To be matter-of-fact about the world is to blunder into fantasy, and all fantasy at that, as the real world is strange and wonderful. The difference between science and the fuzzy subjects is that science requires reasoning, while those other subjects merely require scholarship. Copulation is spiritual in essence, or it is merely friendly exercise. On second thought, strike out merely. Copulation is not merely, even when it is just a happy pastime for two strangers. But copulation at its spiritual best is so much more than physical coupling that it is different in kind as well as in degree. The saddest feature of homosexuality is not that it is wrong or sinful or even that it can't lead to progeny, but that it is more difficult to reach through it, this spiritual union. Not impossible, but the cards are stacked against it. But most sorrowfully, many people never achieve spiritual sharing, even with the help of male-female advantage. They are condemned to wander through life alone. Touch is the most fundamental sense. A baby experiences it all over, before he is born and long before he learns to use sight, hearing, or taste, and no human ever ceases to need it. Keep your children short on pocket money, but long on hugs. Secrecy is the beginning of tyranny. The greatest productive force is human selfishness. Be wary of strong drink. It can make you shoot at tax collectors and miss. The profession of shaman has many advantages. It offers high status with a safe livelihood, free of work in the dreary, sweaty sense. In most societies, it offers legal privileges and immunities not granted to other men. But it is hard to see how a man who has been given a mandate from on high to spread tidings of joy to all mankind can be seriously interested in taking up a collection to pay his salary. It causes one to suspect that the shaman is on the moral level of any other con man. But it's lovely work if you can stomach it. A whore should be judged by the same criteria as other professionals offering services for pay, such as dentists, lawyers, hairdressers, physicians, plumbers, etc. Is she professionally competent? Does she give good measure? Is she honest with her clients? It is possible that the percentage of honest and competent whores is higher than that of plumbers, and much higher than that of lawyers, and enormously higher than that of professors. Minimize your thirblegs until it becomes automatic. This doubles your effective lifetime, and thereby gives time to enjoy butterflies and kittens and rainbows. Have you noticed how much they look like orchids? Lovely. Expertise in one field does not carry over into other fields, but experts often think so. The narrower their field of knowledge, the more likely they are to think so. Never try to out-stubborn a cat. Tilting at windmills hurts you more than the windmills. Yield to temptation. It may not pass your way again. Waking a person unnecessarily should not be considered a capital crime. For a first offense, that is. Go to hell, or other insult direct, is all the answer a snoopy question rates. The correct way to punctuate a sentence that starts, "Of course, it is none of my business, but," is to place a period after the word "but." Don't use excessive force in supplying such moron with a period. Cutting his throat is only a momentary pleasure and is bound to get you talked about. A man does not insist on physical beauty in a woman who builds up his morale. After a while, he realizes that she is beautiful. He just hadn't noticed it at first. A skunk is better company than a person who prides himself on being frank. All's fair in love and war. What a contemptible lie. Beware of the black swan fallacy. Deductive logic is tautological. There is no way to get a new truth out of it, and it manipulates false statements as readily as true ones. If you fail to remember this, it can trip you with perfect logic. The designers of the earliest computers called this the GIGO law, i.e. garbage in, garbage out. Inductive logic is much more difficult, but can produce new truths. A practical joker deserves applause for his wit according to its quality. Bastinado is about right. For exceptional wit, one might grant keel hauling, but staking him out on an anthill should be reserved for the very wittiest. Natural laws have no pity. On the planet Tranquil around KM 849, Geo, lives a little animal known as a gnatfn. It is herbivorous and has no natural enemies and is easily approached and may be petted, sort of a six-legged puppy with scales. Stroking it is very pleasant, It wiggles its pleasure and broadcasts euphoria in some band that humans can detect. It's worth the trip. Someday, some bright boy will figure out how to record this broadcast. Then some smart boy will see commercial angles. And not long after that, it will be regulated and taxed. In the meantime, I have faked that name and catalog number. It is several thousand light years off in another direction. Selfish of me. Freedom begins when you tell Mrs. Grundy to go fly a kite. Take care of the cojones, and the frijoles will take care of themselves. Try to have getaway money, but don't be fanatic about it. If everybody knows such and such, then it ain't so. By at least 10,000 to one. Political tags, such as royalist, communist, democrat, populist, fascist, liberal, conservative, and so forth, are never basic criteria. The human race divides politically into those who want people to be controlled and those who have no such desire. The former are idealists acting from highest motives, for the greatest good of the greatest number. The latter are surly curmudgeons, suspicious and lacking in altruism, but they are more comfortable neighbors than the other sort. All cats are not gray after midnight. Endless variety. Sin lies only in hurting other people unnecessarily. All other, sins are invented nonsense. Hurting yourself is not sinful, just stupid. Being generous is inborn. Being altruistic is a learned perversity. No resemblance. It is impossible for a man to love his wife wholeheartedly without loving all women somewhat. I suppose that the converse must be true of women. You can go wrong by being too skeptical as readily as by being too trusting. Formal courtesy between husband and wife is even more important than it is between strangers. Anything free is worth what you pay for it. Don't store garlic near other vittles. Climate is what we expect. Weather is what we get. Pessimist by policy, optimist by temperament. Is it possible to be both? How? By never taking an unnecessary chance and by minimizing risks you can't avoid. How? By never taking an unnecessary chance and by minimizing risks you can't avoid. This permits you to play out the game happily, untroubled by the certainty of the outcome. Don't confuse duty with what other people expect of you. They are utterly different. Duty is a debt you owe to yourself to fulfill obligations you have assumed voluntarily. Paying that debt can entail anything from years of patient work to instant willingness to die. Difficult, it may be, but the reward is self-respect. But there is no reward at all for doing what other people expect of you, and to do so is not merely difficult, but impossible. It is easier to deal with a footpad than it is with the leech who wants just a few minutes of your time, please. This won't take long. Time is your total capital, and the minutes of your life are painfully few. If you allow yourself to fall into the vice of agreeing to such requests, they quickly snowball to the point where these parasites will use up 100% of your time and squawk for more. So learn to say no, and to be rude about it when necessary. Otherwise, you will not have time to carry out your duty or to do your own work, and certainly no time for love and happiness. The termites will nibble away your life and leave none of it for you. This rule does not mean that you must not do a favor for a friend or even a stranger. But let the choice be yours. Don't do it because it is expected of you. I came, I saw, she conquered. The original Latin seems to have been garbled. A committee is a life form with six or more legs and no brain. Animals can be driven crazy by placing too many in too small a pen. Homo sapiens is the only animal that voluntarily does this to himself. Don't try to have the last word. You might get it. Variations on a theme. 13. Boondock. Ira, said Lazarus Long, have you looked at this list? He was lounging in the office of colony leader Ira Weatherall at Boondock, largest only settlement on the planet Tertius. With him was Justin Foote, the 45th, freshly arrived from New Rome, Secundus. Lazarus, Arabel addressed that letter to you, not to me. That preposterous puff gut will get me annoyed yet. Her extreme ubiquity, Madam Chairman Pro Tem Arabel Foote Hendrick, seems to think she has been crowned Queen of the Howards. I'm tempted to go back and pick up that gavel. Lazarus passed the list to Weatherall. Give it a gander, Ira. Justin, did you have anything to do with this? No, Senior. Arabel told me to deliver it, and instructed me to brief you in ways to ensure delivery of delay mail from various eras, which does present problems for pre-diaspora dates. But I don't consider her ideas practical. If I may so, I know more Terran history than she does. I'm certain you do. I think she cribbed that list from an encyclopedia. Don't bother me with her notions. Oh, you can transcribe them and give me the cube, but I shan't play it. I want your ideas, Justin. Thank you, ancestor. Call me Lazarus. Lazarus, the official reason for my visit is to report to her on this colony. Justin, Ira put in quickly, does Arabel think she has jurisdiction over Tertius? I'm afraid so, Ira. Lazarus snorted. Well, she hasn't. But she's so far away it can't hurt if she wants to call herself Empress of Tertius. Our situation is this, Justin. Ira is colony leader. We are still shaken down. I'm mayor. Ira does the work. But I bang the gavel at community meetings. There are always colonists who think that a colony can operate like a big city planet. So I preside to throw cold water on damn foolishness. When I'm ready to start this time travel junket, will eliminate the job of colony leader and Ira will take over as mayor. But feel free to look over the joint, count noses, examine any records, do as you like. Welcome to Tertius, the biggest little colony this side of Galactic Center. Make yourself at home, son. Thank you, Lazarus. I would be staying, colonizing, but I want to remain chief archivist until I finish editing your memoirs. Lazarus said, "Oh, that junk. Burn it up. Gather ye rosebuds, man." Ira said, "Lazarus, don't talk that way. I put up with your whims for years to get it on record." "Piffle. I paid you back when I grabbed the gavel and kept the ugly Duchess from banishing you to Felicity. You got what you want. Why do you care about my memoirs?" "I care." "Well, maybe Justin could edit them here. Athene. Palace Athene. Are you there, honey?"
"Listening, Lazarus," came a sweet soprano voice from a speaker over Ira's desk.
"Your memories include my memoirs, do they not?"
"Certainly, Lazarus. Every word you've spoken since Ira rescued you."
"Not rescued, dear. Kidnapped."
"Revision. Since Ira kidnapped you from that flophouse and all your earlier memoirs."
"Thanks, dear. See, Justin? If you must do button sorting, do it here. Unless you have unfinished business on Secundus. Family or such?"
No, family. Grown children, but no wife. My deputy is doing my job, and I've nominated her as my successor, subject to approval by the trustees. But I find myself startled. How about my ship?
My ship, you mean? I don't mean my yacht Dora, but that one-man auto packet you arrived in. The homing pigeon. Belongs to a corporation owned by another corporation of which I am major stockholder. I'll accept delivery, and that saves Arabelle half the lease time.
So, Madam Chairman Pro Tem did not lease that auto packet, Lazarus. She requisitioned it for public service.
Well, well, Lazarus grinned. Maybe I'll sue her. Justin, there is nothing in the Articles of Contract under which Secundus was colonized that permits requisition of private property by the state, correct, Ira?
Technically correct, Lazarus, although there is long precedent for eminent domain in land.
Ira, I'd argue even that, but have you ever heard of it being applied to spaceships?
Never, unless you count the New Frontiers.
Ouch! Ira, I didn't requisition the New Frontiers. I stole it to save our skins.
I was thinking of Slayton Ford's part in it, not yours. Constructive requisitioning, perhaps.
It's pretty small of you to bring it up a couple of thousand years after his death. Furthermore, had Slayton not done what he did, I wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. Nor any of us, damn you, Ira.
Get your feathers down, Grandfather. I was just pointing out that a head of state sometimes has to do things he would never do as a private individual. But if Arabelle can requisition the homing pigeon when it sits on Secundus, then you can do the same on Tertius. You are each head of state of an autonomous planet. Teach her a lesson.
No, Ira, don't tell me. It happened to me once. If it got to be a habit, it would put a stop to interstellar travel. I won't touch that bucket under any such flimsy legality, but I do own it, indirectly, and if Justin wants to stay, he can turn it over to me, and I'll return it to Transport Enterprises. Let's get back to that list. See what that old bat wants? The times and places she wants me to report on?
Looks like an interesting itinerary.
It does, eh? Then you do it. Battle of Hastings. First, Third, and Fourth Crusades. Battle of Orleans. Fall of Constantinople. French Revolution. Battle of Waterloo. Thermopylae and 19 other encounters between rough strangers. I'm surprised she didn't ask me to referee the bout between David and Goliath. I'm chicken, Ira. I fight when I can't run. How does she think I managed to live so long? Bloodshed is not a spectator sport. If history says that a battle took place at a given location on a particular day, then I'll be somewhere, or somewhen, far away, sitting in a tavern drinking beer and pinching the barmaids. Not dodging mortar fire to feed Arabelle's ghoulish curiosity.
I tried to suggest that, said Justin. But she said that this was an official family's project.
The hell it is. I told her about it simply to be sure the delay mail set up. I'm a coward by trade and not working for her. I'll go where and when I please, see what I want to, and try not to antagonize local yokels, especially those fighting each other. It makes them trigger happy.
Lazarus, said Ira Wetherall, you never have said what you do plan to see.
Well, no battles. Battles are well enough reported for my taste. But there are lots of interesting things in Terran history. Peaceful things, not well reported because they were peaceful. I want to see the Parthenon at the peak of its glory. Cruise down the Mississippi with Sam Clemens as pilot. Go to Palestine in the first 3 decades of the Christian era and try to locate a certain carpenter turned rabbi.
settle whether there ever was such a man. Justin Foote looked surprised. You mean the Christian Messiah? Admittedly, many stories about him are myths, but how do you know they are myths? But that he ever lived is the point that has never been established. Take Socrates. 4 centuries earlier, his historicity is as firmly established as that of Napoleon. Not so with the carpenter of Nazareth, despite the care with which the Romans kept records and the equal care with which the Jews kept theirs. None of the events that should be on record can be found in contemporary records. But if I devoted 30 years to it, I could find out. I know Latin and Greek at that time, and I'm almost as conversant with classic Hebrew. And all I would have to add is Aramaic. If I found him, I could follow him around. Take down his words with a micro-recorder, see if they match what he is alleged to have said. But I won't take any bets. The historicity of Jesus is the slipperiest question in all history because for centuries the question couldn't be raised. They would hang you for asking, or burn you at the stake. I'm amazed, said Ira. My knowledge of Earth's history isn't as thorough as I thought it was. However, I concentrated on the period from Ira Howard's death to the founding of New Rome. Son, you didn't even sample it. But aside from this one weird story, weird because most major religious leaders are heavily documented, whereas this one remained as elusive as the King Arthur legends, I'm not going after great events. I'd rather meet Galileo, get a look at Michelangelo at work. Attend the first performance of one of old Bill's plays at the Globe Theater. Things like that. I particularly like to go back to my own childhood, see if things look as I recall them. Ira blinked. Run a chance of running into yourself? Why not? Well, there are paradoxes, are there not? How? If I'm going to, then I did. That old cliche about shoot your grandfather before he sires your father, then goes foof, like a soap bubble, and all descendants too, meaning both of you among others, is nonsense. The fact that I'm here and you're here means I didn't do it, or won't do it. The tenses of grammar aren't built for time travel. But it does not mean that I never went back and poked around. I haven't any yen to look at myself when I was a snot-nose. It's the era that interests me. If I ran across myself as a young kid, he and I wouldn't recognize me. I'd be a stranger to that brat. He wouldn't give me a passing glance. I know, huh, I was he. Lazarus, put in Justin Foote, if you intend to visit that era, I'd like to invite your attention to one thing, Madam Chairman Pro Tem.